Patrick Timpone, Andrew Goss, and the Real World of Money. And it is Wednesday, the 21st. I saw there's some articles, I think it was last week, and all kinds of things talked about how more right-wing conservative kind of things, too, were getting systematically slowed down through Facebook because of different algorithms and words that they were using. And
that's right.
Boy, there's all kinds of weird things that you can do with that, and nobody would ever know, right?
No, they would
just like
never.
Google does with their searches.
Correct. Where this is going to appear in your news feed now, and this is not going to appear in your news feed. We're going to try to change your way of thinking by the posts that we show you. These are the things that happened today. And they have nothing to do with what you believe, but maybe in many instances are contrary to what you believe, so as to try to influence your opinion. No kidding. That's what they do. That's their whole business model. So the people are surprised by this, or will be shocked by this sort of thing. They don't know about it now. They'll find out about it later. People just assume, that's all my friends are posting today.
Right.
Because that's
right.
What shows up in my news feed. Yeah.
Well, we've noticed, and I actually talked about it a little bit, we've noticed a definite slowdown in Facebook stuff.
Interaction.
On our thing. And we certainly, we're not politically correct all the time as far as, the lefties are concerned, with vaccine, all kinds of stuff.
Sure.
Who knows, You don't know. I don't want to get paranoid or anything like that or blame people.
You don't have
people,
to. This will prove it all for you. Okay, you do not have to get paranoid.
Uh-huh.
When all of this comes out and the writing that will be done ad nauseum on how Facebook operates. So anyone who never read their prospectus or learned what their business plan was and how they intended to make money by letting people share their data with each other,
mm-hmm.
Well, this is what's going to be shocking. And I think when Americans realize it, a great many might decide not to go on Facebook anymore, and that could very well put an end to this company. Mm-hmm. We'll see what happens.
Gold's up $12 this morning. Silver's up 25 cents. Dollar is down, right? So this is kind of, this would be normal activity. Dollar is down, 30.33, and gold is popping up a little bit. So you think we're going to see like a steady kind of ratcheting little thing with gold this year?
That's exactly right.
Yeah, so we could end up anywhere. We used to make predictions, remember?
I do remember. Like, that was fun.
Like what's going to be the end of the year. Maybe give it some thought, and next week we can do a prediction for our New Year's Eve show. But speaking of predictions, Andrew Goss has sometimes done the Nostradamus thing with different predictions. I mean, he's really somehow done that. And he's done it again. You don't know why.
No, I don't.
But I'm going to tell you. You've done it again. Now, we do have to say that generally, Nostradamus would not be a great analogy or allegory because I think it's more like Karnak.
Kreskin.
Oh, yeah.
Sis boom ba.
Sis boom ba. Okay.
Describe the sound made when a sheep explodes.
Sis boom ba. Okay. Well, thank you very much. So Andy's more like Karnak, but he sometimes. It's great. Sis boom ba. I like it. You gotta love that. Okay, so here was your sis boom ba moment. Representative Sam Graves of Missouri, he's working on a big plan for GPS cellular technology radio frequencies to track for your car how many miles your car travels and tax you accordingly.
Uh-huh.
Karnak Goss was right there years ago with that one. And you know what? Boy, this is coming, isn't it, Andrew?
Oh, absolutely.
This is coming, isn't it?
Yeah.
Wow.
I try to avoid those predictions unless I have a pretty good idea that I'm correct. Who likes to be wrong when you're predicting? But yeah, that one, it's as clear as the nose on your face. You know, that's the new model. I mean, think about it. We've traditionally funded highways and transportation and things with the gas tax. And now you've got a whole new fleet of electric cars coming onto the scene. Does that mean they don't pay gas taxes? Well, yeah. So does that mean they get to drive their cars for free on roads that the gas-guzzling vehicles pay for? Yes, that's what it means. So You know that the legislators have to find a way around it, and boy, what do you know? They've done it now.
Yeah, I mean, what an easy way too, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, because they know where you are all the time.
Oh yeah. Right?
I mean, I go up and down Mopac, and I get on the free the quick lane.
Yeah.
It says 35 cents or something to get to North Austin.
Yeah.
You know, I've yet to get a bill for that. Are they really keeping track?
They use a transponder here.
Yeah.
So the transponder is just a little plastic device that you mount on your vehicle.
No, I don't have one of those.
Well, you could very well find yourself getting a bill in the mail.
I'm expecting it. Sure.
Yeah, and you know, when it comes, it might be for 50 tolls and a $25 penalty on each one.
No.
Yeah.
It says you're going to pay by mail. I mean, I'm not doing that illegal, am I?
No, except when you go on to a In the Northeast, it's an easy pass.
Yeah, we don't.
So you call, you deposit a credit card, they give you this plastic easy pass.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
And now as you drive through toll booths, the transponder picks up that you just passed. And if you don't have a transponder, then a picture is taken of your license plate. And so.
Right. No, I get that. Yeah. This is just a fast lane.
Yeah.
And it says, and they have a different price depending on what time of the day. And some most
or
time
how busy it is.
Yeah, or how busy it is. Sometimes it's like 35 cents. But they said that we'll mail you the something
the bill.
Like, yeah.
If you don't have a transponder. Yeah, that's how it started up here, too.
You mean so you can? I could get a transponder? I don't want a transponder.
Absolutely. Well,
I'll call them and find out.
And you'll find there's a little thing that you put on your car. And this, hey, you remember, this all started with the selling of the toll roads back in, when the show first started.
Sure.
We were talking about the idea. Then it was Governor John Corzine of New Jersey wanted to sell the New Jersey Turnpike to a company headed up by Rudy Giuliani.
Oh, really? We like
Rudy. Yeah, and he was going to get money from Cintras and from that's a Spanish company, I think, Macquarie, which is an Australian company, and they were going to put up the money and actually buy the toll road, and then they had the right then to collect the tolls until their initial investment was repaid, and then a fixed rate of return according to the deal. So, fortunately, the people of New Jersey didn't fall for it. But the rest of us in this country will see this slowly creeping in the way it is in the Northeast. You don't drive here without a transponder on your car. And you can expect at the end of the month, you're going to see a bill for the various tolls that you incurred. And you don't even know it in many instances because it's a high speed. You know, you drove by zip and it calculated how much you owed based on what you just drove by. So.
It's kind of like stopping a car and saying, we'd like to see your papers, please.
Highwayman, yes.
I'd like to see your papers, please.
Your papers, please.
Your papers, please.
Sorry, man, all I got's a pipe.
All I got's a pipe. I don't do papers.
Cheech and Chong.
Yeah. Is that what they say on Cheech and Chong?
Yeah, that's an old Cheech and Chong.
Oh, I love that. So, yeah, your papers,
your
please.
Papers, please. Sorry, man, all I got's a pipe.
I was a little late on that one. I didn't. That's funny. I like that. I like that. No, all I got. All I got's a pipe. that's hilarious. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So Governor Murphy is going to legalize recreational marijuana in New Jersey as part of his budget plan. He's going to get $300 million in taxes from letting our children get stoned. So I don't know how this is going to work out. It certainly isn't Colorado, but I'm opposed to it. How about that?
Yeah.
I'm all for personal freedom, but this is one where, you know, I think Nixon got it right. You know, we're distracting our youth with this stuff, alcohol as well. So, you know, the idea of a 21 drinking age and so on and making it illegal for kids to consume certainly sounds right. But yet every week, every day in personal life, we encounter drunken teenagers, you know. So they'll find a way to get it. And now you just made it easier for them to get it. And I don't think that would be a good thing for New Jersey.
Not a good thing.
Not for $300 million bucks, you know. Make it hard. Make it impossible. Make it difficult for our children to get their hands on anything that's going to alter their mind. And that's certainly one. So.
Let's take a couple emails here. This is kind of curious.
By the way, we started last year, just in case we were wondering. We did the daily gold price, gold's up, etc. So, you know, where we were a year ago is about 10% lower than where we are right now. So there's your investment. If you're looking for one, you don't even need to look any farther than semi-numismatic gold. Put it away. I think it's a great investment right now.
10%.
Just keep, racking up 10%. I was speaking with a gentleman. Now, this is a gentleman who I last did business with in 1998. Goodness, it's quite a few years. And in 1998, he bought a Mid-State 64 $20 gold piece, and it cost him, you ready, a whopping $525. And so now he's just come into some more money, and he calls and wants to know how much they are today. And they're $1,600. Oh. So, you know, just that right there shocked him and certainly gives you pause for thought. He said, you know, all those years I should have just kept buying them. I'm like, well, yeah, I told you, dollar average in, make a pile. And that's what you do. You know, you don't do it like that, where you buy once and then you wait 20 years and buy again. Rather, you buy and accumulate and get on a program much the same way that you save money. And as the time passes by, you'll find that it takes more and more Federal Reserve notes to buy the same gold and silver coins.
Okay. Hold on a second. Calls come first, so let's grab
it. Sure.
Hey, what's your first name? Where are you calling from?
Hey, this is Mary from West Virginia. Also, you don't have to put this on the air because...
No, you are on the air.
Your live air program is jumping between two different programs.
I know. We've been, we said it this morning. Thanks a lot. Yeah, we know what's happening. Yeah, thanks.
Okay, that was the only reason why I called it.
Yeah, man, it was, you know, my thing is showing nothing, and now I'm getting emails saying that doing the same dumb thing. See, we never even should have said anything.
You did.
So I don't know what's going on. Mm-hmm. I don't even see it here. It looks like it's solid here. So, man, Houston, we have another thing. So listen to the podcast. We're sorry. I don't know what's going on. It looks fine here. I don't see any indication that it's dropping out. And we got something on our end that's not happy. Okay, here's a scenario I'm looking at. In 2 years, writes Bob, I want to take my lump sum retirement cash instead of an annuity because I'm assuming that with rising interest rates,
that's right,
I may make more money purchasing CDs within the IRA than an annuity would pay out.
Correct.
I did nothing else except buying gold coins from Andy or some other investing. I'd like to think it could hold on to as much of that cash doing this, but when I turn 70, I have to make withdrawals and pay the tax.
Correct.
Correct? So I've read that if taking it out of a traditional IRA paying taxes on, then putting it into the both IRA, I could leave it parked there without any further taxes.
That's correct. The Roth IRA, R-O-T-H. So you cash out of your traditional IRA, you pay your taxes and put the money in a Roth IRA where your gains are tax-free. So you pay taxes on the money you put in, and then all the money you take out is tax-free. So, yeah, that sounds like a good plan to me. Let me know how you make out.
Yeah, so that's what they were saying. Should I set up the Roth IRA before time? So you've already answered it. So
absolutely,
that's
yes.
That's how you do it.
Pay your tax, take your tax hit. And you might not want to take it all in the same year, unless you're talking about numbers that are going to hit you in the maximum no matter what you do. So in other words, if you take substantially equal payments out of your IRA over 3 years and slowly move the money into the IRA so you're not paying the maximum tax in any given year, that might be an option. Again, I don't know what size numbers you're talking about, but consult with your tax attorney before deciding to take all the money out of your traditional IRA and pay the tax hit. I mean, that could be outlandish.
Here's an email. Thanks to you, your show, I got out of cryptos and I got into trading commodities.
Oh, goodness.
And Thank he you. Said, once I saw the 20,000 Bitcoin, I knew that this thing was Bubble Land, but you helped me to even think about it, and I appreciate it.
Wow. Oh,
see,
thank
there you.
You
go. See, all your little lampshade talk helps somebody.
I hope so. I'll tell you.
It helps somebody.
They never cease to amaze me. I'll tell you what people will put their money into. So I'm glad this is I hope it was a positive experience for you. I hate it to hear when people lose money.
Yeah.
So if you bought Bitcoin early and you sold out at the peak.
$20,000.
God bless you. You did great. And, keep your skepticism always alarmed. As they used to say, if it's too good to be true, it probably is too good to be true.
Yeah, they're still hanging out at 10 for lampshades. But, you know, do you think it'll ever go back to that 20 again? I guess it could bubble up again.
Yeah, you remember their idea that there would only be so many of these things, you know? And their willingness to hold the line there might make a difference. And it's back.
They'd almost have to now. The worst thing they could do is say, "Oh, you know what? We're just going to make more."
Yeah.
They'd really get crash, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
But now,
and I know a bunch of those folks that that really believe that within a decade, this will be the only money. There won't be any money.
I don't think that's going to be true. I mean, there are things that's adding to the pressure on them. I think the boys in G20, we haven't even mentioned it. They're going to probably
decided in concert. Yeah,
they probably said that. Have they already decided and had a meeting, and that they're going to be negative towards cryptos? Or do you think?
Yeah, no, they've already made that decision. So, and the problem that Lampshade has to deal with is what they call the death cross.
Mm. I don't know that one.
Well, okay, so it peaked out, right, 20,000, but its recent bottom was, what, 7,300 on Sunday?
Something like that, yeah, right? Something like that, yeah.
And then it had 3 days of wow, 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 and it's now at its highest level since March, I think, in 91.
I think it's back to 9,000.
Yeah, 9,100, right? But it's, remember the chart guys, right?
Oh, there's something about that move.
Yes, yes.
Oh, yeah. I see.
Yeah, the death cross. When the 50-day moving average cuts into the 200-day moving average.
Oh, you're such a geek.
I know, I'm sorry. You got to get the chart guys to explain it to you. So the 200-day moving average of this thing is 9180. And the 50-day moving average is 9450. So a 50% retracement of the recent drop is 9470. So a break above 9470 would provide the bulls with the ammunition to say, hey, it's going to continue up. But if they don't break that 10.5, then the 50-day moving average cuts the 200-day moving average from above, and this is known as a death cross.
Because it's that means you're done, stick a fork in it, kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
Really?
It brings a sell-off. If the chart guy's looking, when they see a death cross, that's it. That's it. They don't care about anything except the chart says sell. So
isn't that interesting how it's possible that human consciousness or trends or the way people look at things are so predictable?
Mm-hmm.
That they just repeat themselves. Isn't
popular delusions and the madness of crowds.
Isn't that curious how that could possibly
Charles
work?
McKay had it right.
Well, yeah. I tell you
it's
what.
It's all there, black and white, that's clear right. As crystal. You get nothing. You lose. Good day, sir.
That's
So if you're looking at this from a chart perspective,
it's
got to get over 10.5 and it's got to do it quick. If it does, then that's good.
Mm-hmm.
But if it doesn't, if it starts consolidating around this,
what does that mean, consolidate?
Where it just hangs there, you know, 9,000. The longer it does, that tends to drive down its moving average. So what was it 200 days ago? What was it 50 days ago? So if it consolidates around 9,000 and just stays there, that triggers a sell-off. Now it's like, okay. You know, it's over. So we sell off. And then where could it go? Well, still much higher than it started, but I think the February low was, 5,800, 6,000? So the longer
I think it got down to 58 or something. Yeah.
The longer it takes it for the lampshade to reach that 9,500 mark, the higher the risks of a death cross in any given weekly chart. And, well, the bears will be out in full force at that point. So.
Which means that, you know.
Down. And you throw in, as you point out, that the G20 has decided regulatorily that it's going to come down hard on cryptos. You know, they're evading taxes, there's no reporting, et cetera. There's been a bunch of instances where regulatory authorities such as the IRS have turned to the Bitcoin exchanges and said, give us your records, give us your data, tell us who your owners are. So,
is that like give us your tired, you're
poor?
You're
not
poor,
quite.
You're hungry, or something. you're tired, you're poor, you're hungry, you know, that one.
Yeah, and I still want to know, when all the mining is done, how on earth are you going to pay the miners? Yeah, they've already mined all the bitcoins they can possibly mine. Well, what does that mean? That there's going to be higher transaction fees? So it's far from a cut and dried case for me. So I want to know how it's going
to
work.
Yeah, yeah, and also to even add to insult to injury, there are moves afoot. I think even Facebook and Google are considering, I think they've already done it, to not allow advertising. Did you see this?
Yes.
For different crypto things.
Right.
Yeah. So the boys must be behind this, right?
Since sure
they
are.
Kind of control Faceplant and Google, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. So there could be a slow crush on this whole crypto movement. Wouldn't that be interesting if we look back and say, remember when the whole crypto thing happened?
Yeah, remember when that happened?
Yeah. But that doesn't, that's not the same as saying blockchain, correct?
No, it isn't.
Okay, so there's a difference.
That's right.
Big difference. And blockchain is here to stay.
Well, I think so. Yeah, the idea of open ledger, I believe that'll even go into banking. So, yeah.
Sure, I would think so, right? I mean, why wouldn't they? Because it's fast and it's
secure, yeah.
And it's open ledger means you can go in there and find out anything. Oh, Patrick bought some zinc, off of Amazon in 2014.
I can see where these,
you know, that kind of thing, right?
Yeah, I can see where these dollars have been.
Yeah,
and
that's what the boys want, right? They want to know everything.
Do and they don't. Yeah, they do and they don't.
Well, not for them.
Yeah, not for them, indeed.
Yeah, well, you probably won't see the Federal Reserve Bank of New York going blockchain anytime soon.
That's what I believe, and I think that's what the people inside the Fed understand. So how do they deal with it? That's the question. And I think the G20 boys decided that they're going to deal with it by taking the same stand that you would with a cash transaction, and that's not going to be pleasant for the crypto users. Transaction fees are, of course, the other thing that... that's being kicked around. If you remember, when it hit the 20,000 mark, we talked about how it would cost like $50 to make a transaction using it. So, I mean, that's come significantly down since then, but it's just a point to pay attention to. If you're buying something for $50 and you have to pay a $50 fee to make the transaction, that pretty much rules it out as a currency of choice. So I've yet to see how they're going to handle this idea that you can't compensate the miners once all the coins are created.
Well, did you see, this is curious, executive order, President Trump says that you cannot buy Venezuela crypto coin called a petro.
Right.
It's against the law. Now, can he do that?
Sure he can.
How? I mean, I mean, if we wanted to buy a petro, couldn't we buy a petro? What is the president? What kind of... He doesn't have control over that.
He does. Yeah, he does. He could put sanctions on other countries and say you cannot buy their goods. So this is just another one of those goods. It's an asset from a country that we can't do business with, according to the president. So think Iran here. Think North Korea. It's easy for the president to say, that's it. You can't buy whatever from North Korea. You can't buy anything from Iran. And so he can do that. That's well within his right.
Oh, because they do the whole national security thing.
Oh, yes.
Right.
Yes,
yeah. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And,
he wants to protect us.
And he doesn't like Maduro.
He doesn't like.
Why don't they like Maduro? I mean, what do they care?
Yeah, well, they care because this is it's a Bolivarian revolution in South America. We've talked about it many times when Hugo was still alive. He was kind of leading the charge down there. Like, we can stand up to these guys. We don't have to be serfs to a dollar economy. And so this is just one more example of that. Trying to bypass the banks and go straight to the people. And that's what they did, I mean, effectively. There's no underwriter. There's no Goldman Sachs on the scene. Taking a piece of whatever money they're trying to raise. They do it through these cryptocurrencies and can reach the marketplace directly. And that's why I think it's such a threat to the boys.
Threat to the boys. We don't like to threat to boys. You know, this is pretty interesting when you think about central banking and their power and what they're really up to.
Mm-hmm.
Bank of Japan purchased 75% of Japan's debt issued in 2017. Is that possible? To 10-year treasuries in Japan in 2013 was 1%, and now there are 10 years are 0.04%. And last year they bought 75% of Japan's debt. So nobody wants this stuff. And why? What's going on over there? I mean, why would Japan just keep borrowing money? Are they going to figure this out somewhere along the line? Or,
yeah.
I mean, what is, you know, it's a big country, isn't it? Like the third or fourth largest
It's a big economy.
Economy in the world?
Yeah.
What are these guys doing? I don't get it.
Well,
I mean,
they absolutely are on the pushing on a string concept. So you have people there that are not spending money. You think our monetary velocity is bad? You should see them. As quick as a Japanese person gets his hands on money, they save it.
They stuff their yen in the mattress.
And pretty much.
Yeah.
And so then the central bank is forced, like, okay, come on, you guys, spend the money. You won't spend it? All right, then we'll spend it. And so then the central bank itself starts buying real estate and securities and anything else that people won't buy. And that's what Japan has engaged in. So I'll be curious to see how that ends, because if it ends successfully, the rest of the central banks will do the same thing. And if it isn't, well, it could end ugly. And fortunately for us, Japan holds a lot of our debt. we don't hold a lot of theirs. So it's not like we'll lose money as a result.
So how's this going to affect the dollar and our listeners who are dollar dudes and dudettes? Anything at all?
Oh, yeah. Listen, the dollar is doomed. And it's doomed in slow motion.
Huh.
It's not a crash and collapse and now it's worth nothing. But it's a slow, steady death of 1,000 cuts. And, you know, a 90-grade dollar from a 104-grade dollar a year and 2 months ago it's dramatic. And year after year after year, it cuts into the purchasing power of your dollar dramatically. So that's why it's bad. And it will continue to be bad.
Is this something historical, do you think, without getting too dramatic? That's going on with this dollar this time after 100 years of whatever.
Yeah.
Do you think it's like a big deal where we're going to really see a long-term erosion of the dollar? Do you?
Yes, yes.
Because?
Well.
Just with everything going on, huh?
Did I mention that the national debt spiked like $1.2 trillion since September?
I see.
So it was like September of 2017, the national debt was $19.8 trillion. We hadn't even hit $20 trillion yet. 6 months later, we're 21? My goodness, do that math. You're talking about not $1.2 trillion a year, but $1.2 trillion in 6 months. That's like $2.4 trillion a year. So that's what's going to kill the dollar. Not all at once, but very slowly.
So the people that own Dollar Inc., what do you suppose their game plan is here? Do they really care?
Dilute us out of debt.
Walk me through that. Dilute themselves out of debt.
Yeah, well, they use the debt to buy real assets. So think of the Zimbabwe farmer who sold his land 5 years ago or 10 years ago for $100 billion, let's say. And then 5 years later, that $100 billion note would buy him a loaf of bread. And, you know, now it's $100 trillion.
$100 trillion.
So the $100 billion that he took for his whole plantation has been diluted to where its purchasing power is nothing.
So this is similar to what we will, but not to that extent. It won't get that crazy.
Great. I don't know. Greater than half the population finds themselves in debt.
It's a huge amount. I think there's, $13 trillion
consumer debt.
Yeah.
And then, you know, now you add $21 trillion in federal debt and tons and tons and tons of corporate debt. And so paying this off when your debt is three times the supply of money, then somebody's not getting paid. So like every first person out of three gets paid, the other two do not. Uh-huh. Or you give everyone 30 cents on the dollar, but that's where we are. Again, we have three times as much debt as we have actual money to pay. So what do you do in that instance? If you double the supply of money, it becomes a lot easier to pay your debt. If you triple it, well, then everybody can pay. So, I mean, this is the plan, although not on that broad of a stroke, but increasing the money supply, or let's say decreasing the value of the dollar by 10% a year, won't take very many years to where you wipe out a lot of that debt.
Wow.
And I think that's the plan.
So do you think that the President Trumpster, he understands this?
Oh, goodness, yeah.
You think he's in
on it? But now he's hired Larry Kudlow,
King Dollar. Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Now, Kudlow is a...
King Dollar.
That's an interesting choice. What do you think President Trump thinking here?
Well, make America great again. That's what is his swing thought.
Borrow.
Well, Larry Kudlow is a strong dollar guy. And I don't know how his advice is going to cut or square with Jerome Powell, the new Fed chairman. So this is really, as Mr. Trump has talked about, he puts people around him with all points of view. Now, I hate to think he's bringing Kudlow on just so that he's got the biggest guy and the most prominent guy that can give him the strong dollar argument. And, you know, like he did with prior people that have left his cabinet, he brings this person in, go ahead and make your case for a strong dollar, and the guy does it, and everyone else poo-poos it. And so then Mr. Trump is convinced. He's heard the best side of the strong dollar, and it didn't convince him or anyone around him. Then he goes about his business. You know, this is what happened to the former chairman of Exxon, the former Secretary of State. This is what happened to so many other people in his cabinet. He brings them in, lets them make their case for why continuing business as usual makes sense, and then if he doesn't agree with it, he'll shift the gears, and he knows that he's heard the best side of that story. So I hate to think, but I do believe that's Mr. Kudlow's role in all of this, to make the best possible case for why we should keep the dollar strong. Because I know Mnuchin has already told him in his ear, we can fix this all easily by simply devaluing the dollar. We just make it worth less, and we'll take more of them to pay obviously the same amount of goods and services.
Boy, and something's going on with the boys, and they're wanting to get rid of him because Mr. Trump is really lawyering up. Boy, he's hiring more attorneys, and I'm glad he got a big bank account.
Yeah. Well, he hired that DeGenova guy.
Who's that?
Well, he's the latest addition to his legal team. And DeGenova's been making the case, anybody that'll listen, that there's a conspiracy to run this president out of office.
You think?
And that the deep state is behind it. So they do a poll. Everybody's poo-pooed this idea of the boys, the deep state.
Sure.
For the longest time.
But not anymore. I mean,
all of a sudden, 75% of the American people believe that that an entity like that exists. What the church committee called the shadow government. It's a government within government that regardless of what the people want, regardless of what the politicians want, they get what they want. And I talked about how the army is not run by the generals, it's run by the sergeants. And, of course, these text exchanges between the FBI agents and all of this stuff that was shed light on, yeah, their secret society and et cetera. I mean, these are really fuel for this entire belief. And as Americans have this pointed out to them, they suddenly believe it, that this entity within still exists and exists more sharply than it ever did. Now, when I tried convincing the people of these secret societies back in the mid-80s, boy, I was, you know, I'm go get my tinfoil hat. I'm a nut.
Oh, well, you're just a crazy person.
But now, come on. Three people out of four believe it exists.
Wow.
And, and I think this whole affair proves it to them. Their fingers are on the scale, and they don't want to indict Miss Clinton. They don't indict Miss Clinton. They don't. And they investigate.
They just don't.
They
just don't.
And they whitewash. And,
pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. And think about it. I need to put that on the front page, the secret society speech of JFK. I mean, that was 60 years ago.
That's right.
You know,
asking the media, please help me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He knew it, boy.
Yeah. There's a plot fomenting. I love that one.
Did he really say that? Did he say their plot is fomenting?
Okay. So to attack the high office of president, and before I leave, I will reveal it to the American people. Yeah, I think it's supposed to be, and I cannot find evidence of this speech. It was supposed to be at Columbia University.
Oh, I think it's there somewhere, isn't it?
No, believe me, exhaustive
really?
Search.
Really?
The Kennedy...
You're talking about the secret society speech.
No.
No, this was something else.
Something harsher than
that. I see. Yeah. That's kind of like...
And it was supposedly 31 days before his assassination.
Oh, it's kind of like the Man in the High Castle kind of thing. You can't find the film, right?
Right. But even the Kennedy Library denies it exists. It says he wasn't there. He couldn't have made that speech. I encountered the same thing with Sir Josiah Stamp. He was at the University of Texas, and he was quoted as saying, as long as banking is legal, a man would be a fool to do anything else.
Yeah.
And no, he never said that. It doesn't exist. And then, you know, another one.
And when was it, Andrew, that you thought it was? Right before his assassination?
October 6th.
October. And he gave the speech to whom?
Columbia University.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. No sign of it.
Sign of it anywhere.
Much more hard-hitting than the secret society speech.
Correct.
Oh,
yes.
Boy.
And that secret society speech was given strictly to newsmen.
I thought it was a college university. No,
it was a correspondence dinner, and he was imploring the media to please help me get this point across to the American people. And,
did they?
They did not.
I'm did shocked not. There.
They ignored him. I had done a piece on the Independent Press. I think it's still on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
It was about the retiring editor of the New York Times. And he's like, they ask us to give a toast to Independent Press. You know, what's an independent press? You people know if you published your true opinion in the paper that you'd be fired before morning. You'd be looking for another job. So let's not talk about an independent press. We write what we're told to write. You know, and he laid it out. And this was, the editor of the New York Times at his retirement speech.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the kind of candor that you want to talk about. When the guy has nothing to lose and he'll tell the truth.
We had a great show a couple of weeks ago. Or I don't know. His fellow's name is Eric Margolis. Ever hear him?
I can't say I have, but there's a lot of great people that I haven't heard of.
He was a wartime correspondent for maybe 40 years.
Wow.
Eric Margolis, and syndicated columnist, 50 years over there. El Salvador, Iraq, Afghanistan.
Okay.
He knows where the bodies are buried, and really cool guy. And he, you know, he wasn't a lefty or righty. He was a all-encompassing basher. You know, he was really fun to talk to.
Equal opportunity.
Equal opportunity basher. Thank you very much. And boy, you know, some of the stories he told about what happened to him when he just did the weapons of mass destruction thing in Iraq. You know, he was CNN guy at that time, man, and he wasn't there long.
Not for long.
Goodbye, man. Thank you very much. You get nothing, you know.
Yeah.
You know, one of those things. It was crazy. I mean,
you know, the idea that there isn't news that's blacklisted, that's officially, just don't bring it up. No, don't bring it up.
Just don't do that one.
Just
man.
Don't bring it up. Yeah.
Boy, if only people really knew, you know.
Like, who's talking about Bayer taking over Monsanto? You remember that?
Well, yeah, it was like one day story, right?
Yeah. Well, but then it was, oh, well, there's no way we can allow the world's largest seed and pesticide conglomerate to buy, you know, to be bought by this German chemical maker with its Bush roots, Bayer.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's right, yeah.
And it's clearly anti-trade, you know. These guys would create such a giant corporation that take over so much of Germany's capability that many thought there was just no way that the EU was going to approve this merger. It's like a $70 billion deal.
Wow.
But yet, no problem.
Not a problem.
Not a problem. Now the German Bayer has bought or will buy an American corporation, which we're probably happy to get rid of, Monsanto.
You can have them. You can have them. Take them.
Take them.
Take them, man. We don't want them.
Promise, get this stuff out of here. No more Roundup. Keep that Roundup out of our food supply.
Right, it'll hurt sulfur sales, but what do we care? I'd rather do that, man.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's actually a lot of, not a lot, but I'm beginning to see in stories like the Musker, the Elon Musk is, now, whether or not this is fake news and, you know, that he's part of the boys.
Yeah.
I wouldn't doubt it, I guess. You don't get that rich. And
that's right.
Right? You don't make that kind of money without being, you know, learn the secret handshake, I guess, right?
Yeah.
China's finance ministry said yesterday that the country will waive income taxes for overseas investors trading yuan-dominated crude future oils contracts.
Mm-hmm.
Tax exemption will immediately affect or cover both institutional and individual investors, the Ministry of Finance. Now, does that mean that there people would have gotten taxed twice anyway if you do these future things? China would tax you and then
the U.S.
Then the U.S. would tax you. Is that true?
Yep.
Is that how that works?
That's how it did work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But now apparently they're going to say you're exempt. And here's the other thing. When you get to this Cambridge Analytica thing, when they get all done with this, they're going to find the links to China there. There's definitely Chinese. That's definitely Chinese operation, that whole thing. Through interlocking directorships, you'll find.
Yeah. This one came in for you, especially for you, is that river you're talking about, the fire. It wasn't, as I suggested, possibly the Monongahela River.
Oh, right. It was the Monongahela.
No, it wasn't. It was the Cayuga. Cuyahoga.
Cayuga.
Cayuga, Cleveland.
Cleveland. Not the
not the Monongahela. Yeah, it wasn't that Monongahela. See, I thought it was the Monongahela when you couldn't pronounce it, but it's the Cayuga or something.
Cayuga. Yeah. Well, here's the bottom line, that our pollution of our water was so bad.
So bad.
That it actually caught fire. The water caught fire. And so we put in environmental regulations to prevent this sort of occurrence. And did I think, and can I get anyone to agree with me, that we should roll back all of those regulations so that our steel companies can be competitive with the Chinese, who also have their rivers on fire, and they have to walk around with masks over their noses just to breathe the air in Beijing. So.
Hey, Mom, the river's on fire. I'll just eat your oatmeal.
Eat your oatmeal and shut up. Get ready to go to work.
It'll be fine, huh?
Yeah. So I don't think that's a wise thing to do. We did at one time ignore environmental concerns, ignore worker safety concern, and there's this economist named Ricardo that talks about comparative advantage. So if another country can make a good or a product cheaper, then they should be allowed to make it cheaper and just sell it into your marketplace, and then you spend your time doing whatever you can do better and cheaper. That's Ricardo is the economist's name. Mm-hmm. I personally think he's full of poop because Ricardo didn't have regulation in his day. He didn't have the idea. To him, steelmaking in the United States would be the same as steelmaking in China. Yeah. So don't point to Ricardo and say that's the reason why we should let the Chinese subvert all of our environmental regulations and worker safety regulations and make steel cheaper. Of course they can make steel cheaper. They're ignoring all the regulations that we've put in place to protect the environment and our workers.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Bill wants to know if you have seen a film called...
Oh, thank you, reader. Thank you, by the way. The Cuyahoga River.
Cuyahoga River, yeah.
Cuyahoga River in Cleveland. Hooga. Not the Monongahela River.
Monongahela
River in Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. Thank you for the clarification.
Mm-hmm. Please ask Andrew if he's seen... Peter Navarro produced a film called The Death by China. It seems to summarize his stance on what China has done negatively to U.S. manufacturing markets throughout the world. Oh,
I haven't.
A great documentary.
But I'll check it out.
Maybe we'll check it out. It's called Death by China.
Death by China.
I wonder if the Netflixer has that.
It might. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure that it touches on many of the things that I touched up on right here. You know, the idea that we put regulations in place to prevent the exploitation of our workers, to prevent corporations from exploiting our environment for profit, and to prevent the sort of things that China allows in the name of competitiveness. So in that environment and in Ricardo's business model, China can make everything cheaper than we can. Everything. And so then what does that mean? We don't do anything and we just buy all of our goods from China? I don't think that's a sound practice, and I don't think Ricardo thought the thing out. Because in his day, as I point out again, there was no government regulation. And so to him, the manufacturing methods in one country were the same as in another, or perhaps more efficient, and that country should be allowed to take advantage of that efficient manufacturing application.
I was reading an article the other day of China and Vietnam, they're trying to strengthen their currency, but here's what I don't understand. I think a dong is like 0.000004. I don't know.
Vietnam?
Yeah, something like that. I don't know what it is. It's like way
nothing.
I mean, of course, before the war, they had a pretty, comparatively to the dollar. But why would they want to strengthen their dong if they are selling like $1 billion worth of shoes, which they're probably the shoe manufacturing mecca of the world, right?
They get access to capital.
Yeah. So what do you mean, though? I mean, wouldn't that mess up their whole export thing if they strengthen their dong?
Not necessarily.
Like, explain why.
Well, for them, they have to weigh the benefits versus the costs. They're having a cheap currency, and in fact, a currency that is constantly
worthless.
Worthless. Yeah, that makes it almost impossible for them to dollar denominate or to dong denominate a bond issue. So, sure, we'll loan you money in dollars, and you're certainly not going to play on the world stage if you have a currency that's constantly losing value. Or in the old days, it would have had to have been pegged to gold before it would be accepted. And this is really what an emerging country...
They need?
Like Vietnam.
They need juice. So in other words, if they wanted to borrow money, do they borrow it in dongs or dollars?
They couldn't borrow in dong. That's the whole point.
Because nobody wants it.
Right. And nobody trusts them to keep it stable until they have to pay it back. The only borrowing that they can do is with dollars.
And then how do they get... Well, they get dollars when they sell shoes, though, right?
Well, no. They make
don't they sell shoes in dollars?
If they sell shoes in dollars, then they have to convert their dollars into dong. Their currency is just not accepted on the world stage as a legitimate currency.
Well, it's an international currency, though, isn't it?
But is it? I mean, how many countries have their reserves denominated in Vietnamese dong?
Yeah, I mean, it's international, but not really. I mean, you can go to a bank and buy some dong if you're going to travel to Vietnam. So it is kind of like international.
And if you intend to spend it in Vietnam, you're fine. But if you're buying nobody is going to the monetary or the FX exchange and saying, I want to store my wealth in dong, It's just not happening.
Yeah.
So their currency is not accepted on the world stage as an equal currency. If they want to buy something, they have to convert their dong into dollars or euros before they can buy anything. And then their exchange rate is not very favorable. Huh. So for an emerging market, a country that wants to be taken seriously on the world stage, they need a stable currency. And if their currency isn't stable, then they can't denominate their loans in it. They can't really present it as payment on the world stage. So it's just an attempt by Vietnam to be accepted as a legitimate currency. And that requires some long-term strength.
Yeah. This is
that's why guys like countries like Venezuela have to tie their currency to oil, or a company like the yuan, a country like China, and a currency like the yuan would have to be tied to gold before it would be accepted for a long-term contract. That, you know, without it, without some sort of a currency peg or some sort of a reliability or standard and keeping its value over the years, why on earth would I loan China money for 10 years? They're going to pay me back in yuan when they own the central bank and have the ability to print all the yuan they want to pay me back. So that's really the move and why Vietnam is attempting to strengthen their currency.
I see. So I just Googled this and saw that even in 1960, the dong was 0.08 cents, which is not terrible. Like, is that 8 pennies? 8 pennies to the dollar, right?
8 pennies to the dong.
To the dollar, right? Eight
dong. Well, how do you know?
Let's see. No. Yeah,
each dong is worth 8 cents.
8 cents. Okay, eight cents. So that was in 50 or 60. I can't seem to pull up 50. I'd like to look at that before the whole Vietnam thing. Mm-hmm. But now the dong is 0.0004. I mean, what is that? That's like a fraction, you know. So
50 times less.
So did they bong the dong when they went in?
They bong the dong.
Did they bong the dong when they did the war, like they did to Iraq and other places?
Of course they did. Yeah. I mean,
that's what the bank does, right?
And, you know, after Vietnam became its own entity and the U.S. is out. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, we were very spiteful, very vengeful. Nobody could do business with them, and we weren't importing anything from them. And so they were left on their own. And they had to devalue their currency in order to feed their people, and they kept devaluing their currency until now they're thinking about being on the world stage again. For the longest time,
that they'd like to, right?
Nobody would do business with Vietnam. Nobody. And now, of course, that's all we forget and forgive.
Yeah,
I can't, and I know many Vietnam veterans can't. But hey,
wait a minute. Forgive them for what? They didn't do anything.
No, they didn't. Well, tell that to John McCain. You know, he's
they only were doing that because we invaded them, right?
How many MIAs are there?
Yeah, but there wouldn't have been an MIA, Andrew, if you wouldn't have gone in their country and start blowing them up.
I agree. Listen, I see both sides of the issue. But at the end of the day, give back the prisoners, give back their remains, give back the bodies.
Haven't they done that?
No.
To this day, they're just pissed off.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, how many Vietnamese did we kill in the United States?
Oh, yeah. And how many did
millions.
We export, bring into the United States that were enemies of the state? So there was a lot of bad feelings on both sides. And point is, for the longest time, Vietnam was persona non grata. There was no business done with them. And now they're back to being a full trading partner. It's like, let bygones be bygones.
Well, you could see Jane Fonda movies over there.
Yeah, you certainly could. She's a national hero.
She's a national hero. We got it. You want to do a coin question before you go?
Oh, I love coins.
Love coins. Okay. Here is someone that says, let's see.
We don't like condition rarity. We
types
like
of rarities rare. Beyond just normal census or condition rarities I ran
Ooh.
Across recently. Okay.
Wow.
Number one, unique.
Wait. Before you ask that question, so types of rarities beyond condition?
Just normal census or condition
rarities. Or census,
rarity.
Yeah.
What does that
so
mean?
So those are the two basic rarities. So you have a coin that's rare in any grade, even any example at all is rare. Or you have a coin that's only rare because it's in some heightened state of preservation or condition. So it's like a, you know, perfect grain of sand on the beach. There's billions of grains of sand, but this one is perfect. And so that's a condition rarity. It's only rare in this particular condition. In every other condition, it's very common. And census rarity, it's rare in any condition. And so now this writer is found a third or more types of rarity. I'm anxious to hear.
Is a proof coin considered a truly different coin than the regular version of the coin?
Yes.
Or is it just a condition rarity, i.e. proof PR62PGS 1859 seated silver dollar coin? There were made only 800 of these guys that year. But of course, the regular 1859 silver dollars were made very large quantities.
Correct.
Coin is stunningly beautiful. What would this coin be worth?
Yeah, right. And in many instances, a high-grade mint state example is worth more than a proof example. But the question, I think, is whether a proof example is a condition rarity. And I would argue that it isn't, especially in the case where they're only made in proof. For example, the 1877 20-cent piece, they're never made any business strikes. The only way you can buy that coin is in proof. Or the 1895 silver dollar. You can't finish a silver dollar set unless you have an 1895 silver dollar. And guess what? They only made them in proof. So it can be both. It can be a condition and a census rarity. I think proof coins are in a category by themselves. So I dispute that they're condition rarities. In many instances, they're census rarities. But a coin in proof condition generally is much rarer than the underlying business strike.
I knew that. It's a coin that has unique history, something to be put value in, like
yes.
1857 gold that was found from a shipwreck of the
yeah.
Central
yeah.
American.
Perfect example. Yeah.
Lots Provenance. Of $20 coins were minted that year.
Yeah.
But it's very rare to find a coin
that was down on the
yeah.
Central American shipwreck.
Right,
good
right,
point.
Right.
So that's provenance. Where did it come from? So
provenance. I like
provenance.
That.
Recently, I was offered a Lafayette dollar in mint state 64. A typical market price on that coin might be $5,000 or $6,000, but yet the seller's asking $35,000.
Oh, is it?
I piqued my interest, so I go to check it out more. It turns out it's one of the presentation coins that was given by President McKinley to a specific Masonic lodge.
Whoa.
And so now it has provenance.
Provenance.
It's, you know, unique because of its who it was given to and where it came from and so forth. And the seller argues that it's worth $35,000 because of that. So, yes, many instances, a coin that has specific provenance and came from a specific place and has a time, et cetera, in history, and you can document it, it can be worth a lot more than a similar example that doesn't have this provenance. So many of these Central America shipwreck coins were promoted as being from the Central America. And the panic of 1857 started when the SS Central America, coming from California, loaded with gold, sank to the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean. That triggered a panic in the financial markets that affected the whole world. So for many people, that, because it was on the Central America, because it was part of that history, that means something, and it's worth a premium to them. And I'll tell you, a lot of the coins that were previously unknown, if they hadn't been discovered in that shipwreck, would be still unknown today. And the 57S $20 is a perfect example. Would I tell people to buy a coin just because it was at the bottom of an ocean? No. We resisted the shipwreck coins, and we still do. To us, it's all about how many were made and how many survived. And it doesn't matter that they were hidden or lost. In this case, sank to the bottom of the ocean. Look at what history taught us. 150 years later, they sent a robot down into that ship and recovered all that gold. So if something was minted in high numbers, but very few are known today or survive today, the first thing I become is suspicious. So for me, typically, when I'm recommending a numismatic coin, it's because there were very few made and even fewer surviving. And proof coins certainly fit that category.
It's kind of fun. Mm-hmm. Did you see where a bunch of gold and coins and 3 tons of gold fell out of an airplane, in a Russian airplane? That was hilarious.
No, I didn't see
it. Yeah, that was good. 3 tons of, and it's like spread over, you know, some snowy land. So, of course, CNN reported and said that it was Vladimir Putin sending some gold to a little private summer residence in Minsk so he could fund the elect Donald Trump campaign in 2020. I just made that last part. No, I made that up. But that's hilarious. But, well, of course, over there, they'll just put out a little thing and they say, if you pick up that gold, you will never see your kids again. So there was no problem. They just
you pick up the gold, you better just turn it in and be done with it. Yeah.
And President Putin, what is his title anywhere?
President. Re-elected. Yeah.
Re-elected. Donald
Third
Trump.
Third time?
Donald,
fourth time?
Well, I think it's 18 years now. Mm. And Donald Trump calls him to congratulate him. And then John McCain goes on record and says, I don't really think he should do that. What are these guys just drink in the morning? Like just hate coffee? Or, I mean, what is it about? Poor.
Yeah, hate Trump coffee.
Hate Trump coffee. It's like, oh, let's put my hate Trump coffee.
Yeah, if there's a way to hate Trump. I mean,
unbelievable.
The use of this private Facebook data is a perfect example.
All right.
So the use of this private Facebook data is what got candidate Obama elected to president, and it was okay when he did it. But then Mr. Trump does the same thing, and that now is somehow nefarious or evil.
Yeah.
So it is a double standard, and you know,
you think?
Yeah, it's so obvious to most people that I'll tell you, the division in news networks. For example, when I used to tell people 5 years ago that, well, Fox is the conservative news and CNN is the liberal news.
Right.
They didn't know. Don't be ridiculous. They're news. How can they have a slant one way or the other? Today, everyone knows. It's like, okay, we understand, which is the way it was at the founding of the Republic. You know, when the Federalist and Anti-Federalist debates were going on, Thomas Jefferson actually got together with somebody in the State Department and bought a newspaper for the sole purpose of putting out the Anti-Federalist sentiment. And Alexander Hamilton and John Jay and others did the same thing to put out the Federalist sentiment. So people knew, oh, that's a Democratic paper, that's a Republican paper. Now they don't. Now it's just, oh, some kind of independence. No, John Swinton was right. There's no such thing as an independent press.
Never really has been, has there? I mean, it would make sense. Owners have a lot of money, and they have a political point of view, and they're going to just do what they do, right?
There was a time. Yeah. If you recall, when televisions, radio stations stayed away from political ads. Why? Because if you cover one guy politically, then you had to give, you remember this, equal time.
I remember
his opponent.
Yeah, equal time.
So as a result, the news just stayed out of it. They're like, oh no, we're not going to take either side, because if we show one side, we have to show the other. And as long as that doctrine was in place, equal time, they went out of their way not to put an opinion on the air that they would have to give equal time to an opposing opinion. They're just, let's not do that. We'd hate to give equal time to the opponent. Only when that doctrine changed did they start taking such strong positions.
Oh, well. Yeah, I remember that equal time.
Sure, yeah. And it worked pretty well for the longest time, where the press just stayed the heck out. They reported the news. That's what they were doing, news. And if their news was slanted to one side or the other, well, then they would have to give equal time to the other side. So they kept it completely neutral.
And how long did this go on?
It went on for decades, uh-huh. Patrick. That mm-hmm. was because when the Federal Communications Commission gave the right to use the public airwaves to CBS, they said to them, okay, but a half hour, an hour a day, you have to do just pure news, and that's your payment to the American people for having the ability to broadcast what you want the rest of the time.
This is like in the 50s, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Walter Cronkite.
Pre-Walter, probably.
So this was the news. It was in public service, and it was unbiased. And God forbid somebody from upstairs went down and told the newsroom what to say or what not to say.
So I guess where we're going now, I guess we're going to probably find, we're going to have Amazon News, right, and Google News, right, and Netflix News.
Yep.
And you're going to pick whichever one you want.
Correct.
Whichever you believe, you'll have your own world. You can
it's
live
like
in.
That now. Is it's it? Like that now. Yeah.
Isn't that funny? I mean, isn't it Siri?
I was talking to the Republican club president of a town next to ours.
Yeah.
I said, did you know that President Trump's approval rating has went up? He's like, no, I didn't see that on TV. I'm like, well, which news channel do you watch? He said, well, I only watch Fox. That's it. I only watch Fox. I'm like, you don't watch CNN? No, that's the liberal station. So I don't watch that news. Mm-hmm. That's the other side's news. And it's amazing to me as
that's
a person.
It's really interesting.
I'll look at both sides. I want to see both sides because both sides will lean and slant the story in their direction. And you get, you know, if you look at, watch both, you'll get somewhere in the middle and find the truth.
But isn't Murdoch the Fox guy? Isn't he one of the boys? No, kind of, sort of?
Kind of, sort of. Yeah, you can make that case. But is Sean Hannity? I don't know. I don't know. I just
he's just a conservative, too.
Yeah,
that's
I
all.
Think he's an arch-conservative.
Oh, totally. I
mean, and then if you go over onto CNN, you'll get Rachel Maddow, who's an arch-liberal.
You think?
And if you watch them both for an hour, you might get, you know, the middle road of the story. I really do like the concept of news without a slant or bias, but I think it's been 30 years.
Does any exist that you've ever
seen?
I don't think there is. Wow, wouldn't it be pretty cool, though? Yeah, if you really had it like the old days and had people actually looked and, you know, they did you know, real reporting and dug in there, you know, and all
correct.
That.
Correct, yeah. And if a story has a particular slant one way or the other, you don't even show it or you don't report it as news. You might put it on another program on your air, but you certainly don't include it in the news coverage. You know, in my day, it was, hey, here's the news. All the news that's fit to print.
Yeah. And we, of course, I can remember when I was in high school, I mean, in grade school, we believed Walter Cronkite.
Sure we did.
I mean, we really did.
Had we known he
How would you not believe Walter?
Had you known he was on the CIA payroll,
maybe
however,
not, yeah.
You might not have. And what was a very carefully kept secret in our day is just an open story today.
Because he was kind of on the payroll because there were certain things about Vietnam he didn't say. Right?
Yeah, that's right.
But some of it wasn't so nefarious. So some of it was just too gory, and they didn't want him to do that, right? Stuff like that.
Yeah, their own news network can decide what is and isn't too gory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
No, it was more of a matter of what not to say, you know, what, which story
who got
not
bombed
to.
And how much did you bomb?
Exactly. How many people died?
Mm. Yeah. I watched a film a couple of weeks ago about Deep Throat.
So we're definitely talking about Watergate now, I hope.
Yeah, Watergate. Yeah, it was. And it supposedly, according to this is a true story, I guess the
it was
film.
Guy at the FBI.
Yeah, no.
Number two man.
Number two guy at the FBI was Deep Throat. Is that true? That must be true. What was the fellow's name?
I know it too.
But it was a good movie. Yeah, it was a good movie.
Yeah, I never would have picked him. But the idea that the number two guy at the FBI would leak information to a reporter?
Ooh, Well, he was a good guy. He was a whistleblower, and he knew all the stuff going on, right?
Oh, because he told us he was a good guy. I got it. So if he hadn't told us, he would have been a bad guy. Maybe.
Oh, it's a yes, no, maybe thing.
Yeah, it is, right?
But it was an interesting movie. I didn't know. I never did know they even knew who the Deep Throat dude was.
Not until after his death.
Yeah, right.
When he died.
Yeah. After he died, yeah.
Woodward and Bernstein.
Bernstein. Mm-hmm. Well, kiddo, to our listeners, I'm really sorry. We had just the most cattywampus day of dropouts, so you can hear the whole thing. Yeah. I mean, see, we shouldn't even send anything. It was like
you did.
It didn't. It was like two. We've gone 2 weeks with nothing.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Isn't it interesting how you can say things out in physical reality?
Yeah, and wish them into existence.
Or it's just by mentioning them. Well, it's curious. All right, kiddo. Thanks a lot. Your number up there is 800-468-2646.
Mm-hmm.
People would like to talk to you about stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You got the CDs and all that if people want to get those, right?
Absolutely, yeah. If you haven't gotten those yet, you want to certainly get your hands on those. And keep an eye on your Twitter feed for the hashtag delete Facebook. And the more that picks up.
Oh, what does that mean? Hashtag delete face. Sorry, I don't do the Twitter thing.
Okay, so.
What does that mean?
It means that those who don't think that it's okay for Facebook to make money by sharing your personal information are encouraging others to delete their Facebook account.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Really?
Yes, so do that hashtag delete Facebook, all one word, and see how many people are actually making this case. And it's growing by the minute.
No kidding.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Mm. Mm-hmm. Well, the Zuck did sell a whole bunch of stock, a few months ago. So
I hope so.
Maybe he knew this. Maybe he knew this thing was going.
Yeah, maybe.
Coming on. All right, kiddo, thanks for all of your help, and you guys have a nice day in Jersey, and enjoy the snow.
Thank you, brother.
See you soon. Okay, bye. We will see you tomorrow, and hopefully we're going to have a solid streamline, because something was going on today with our internet that I don't know. But, well, we're going to do the best we can.
Nothing is more expensive than bad information. Know the source. OneRadioNetwork.com.